breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like, and this week we watched Highlander. My name is Danielle, and here are the mad artists as well as our guests that I have with me to help break this down today.
Is he really a guest at this point? Hi everyone, it's Samuel.
He's just a recurring guest. Whoever's gonna say hello next.
I'm not guesting, I'm in. What's up, guys? It's me, Tyler, the guy who had the head screwed on straight.
Great job.
Thanks.
It's your favorite silent commentator, John Boy.
Silent commentator.
And our recurring guest, most common on the podcast.
I am Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez, chief metallurgist to King Charles V of Spain, and I'm at your service.
I really...
Oh my god, this is going to be a good one. Tune in, folks! We got Rick back, baby!
Russell's also in the room, but not present on the podcast.
Hi.
He didn't watch the movie. But he's sitting here in silence.
And that's what I'm saying, is Russell isn't technically a guest, but I feel like at this point Rick is on more than Russell. So, like, you know.
Ooh, I'm
just saying.
Taking your job.
Russell, care to comment? Yeah, I mean, if there was anybody who could possibly do Russell better than Russell, it's Rick.
Well, so Rick asked me to put a bug in people's ears, and I didn't remember to tell you, but that's okay, because you're going to tell us now. So everyone needs to go around and say what they thought this movie was going to be about before it started, for those of us who had not seen it, which I think was, unless you've seen it, I think all of us except Rick had not seen this movie.
Oh,
is
boy.
That true?
Yeah, no, I've heard references to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I've never, like, once sat down and, like, watched it.
Okay, so starting with Tyler, I want to go around and say, what did you think this movie was going to be about before it started?
Bro, I knew nothing about this movie other than two things. Scottish people, to some degree, and what was it? I can't remember the movie. I want to say it's Role Models, but I could be wrong, where there was a really nerdy friend who's like that guy who like wants to be your friend, and the main character's like, I'm good, because they shared the same name, and he kept making the joke, there can be only one, it's like Highlander. So outside of that, that's it. That's all I know about the movie.
John, what about you?
So without even like starting up the movie, upon initial, my first thought, Highlander, I thought this was going to be a classic, like, war film, like, the youngest son of the Clan MacLeod, because I had heard MacLeod in reference with Highlander, was going to be the savior of Scotland. That's what I genuinely thought. And then I typed in YouTube Highlander, and I legitimately almost texted Danielle saying, Danielle, am I watching the right movie? Because
we don't want to do Troll 2 again.
No.
And each time I thought, like, I'm like, okay, we're on the right track. I'm like, are we on the right track? I'm like, did I think Homelander instead? You know, the classic antagonist of
oh
The Boys?
Gosh.
Like, I was so confused.
No, I told them, because I asked both of them last night. I was like, so this is what I think it's going to be. I said, you know, I, and honestly, I hadn't even thought about Highlander being something having to do with Scotland. That wasn't even in my mind. I thought it was just going to be like a cool name for like sci-fi bro, very Blade Runner, who has like a cool car or a motorcycle and a gun, and he goes around like defeating bad guys as like a vigilante. And that's what I thought his name was just going to be Highlander because that's a cool name. And I had no other concept of anything that was going to happen. So when it started up, I was completely just blank slate, because as soon as I realized that wasn't what this movie was, I was like, open mind, I'm just going to take it in, because I have no clue what's happening.
It was a pretty incredible experience to go into this blind, because no trailers, no backstory,
exactly.
Nothing, right? So you're going in and you're trying to get a grip, you're trying to get a handle on what this movie is.
Tyler could not wrap his mind around. He kept being like, guys, what is this movie?
The first 10 minutes of this movie is just like,
such a ride.
I'll be honest, I felt like, because I went in with such a blank slate, knowing nothing about it, I actually picked up on it faster. Because I'm sitting there and I'm like, okay, yeah, he's immortal. It's either some reincarnation thing or something like that, but that's another immortal. Okay, he sucked his soul into his body. Okay. And then, like, as things are going, I'm just accepting it blindly. And so it was easier for me to, like, grasp it. Whereas by there was a certain point where Tyler was like, this movie is incomprehensible. And I was like, Tyler, he's an immortal. He's come through time. And he doesn't want to kill all the other people. But the other people have to be killed because there's only going to be one. And they're all gathering together.
And I'm like,
And he's sitting there like, okay.
It's like being strapped to a train without any tracks.
What about
you, Samuel?
So I had it backwards. I knew that it had to do with Scotland, but I had it backwards in that my understanding of this movie was that it was a time travel movie about a modern day person going back to ancient Scotland. That's what I thought it was. So I had it backwards.
Wait, what's the movie?
Outlander.
Yeah. wait. There is a movie though where a regular average Joe gets like transported back into the Middle Ages and all he has is a shotgun. And he has to, like, figure out, like, the witch's spell that brought him back in the first place.
That sounds like the reverse of The Night Before Christmas. Yeah. That's the reverse of The Night Before Christmas. The, like, Vanessa Hudgens movie where, like, a Middle Ages knight gets sent to, like, 2018 Vanessa Hudgens.
Yeah,
and he just shows up in full regalia. It's amazing.
Okay, I thought you were talking about actual The Night Before Christmas. No, I don't think there's any...
The Knight Before Christmas.
I'm pretty sure The Night Before Christmas doesn't include time travel.
Maybe not your Night Before Christmas. Christmas. Oh my goodness. But so what about you, Rick, whenever you first saw this?
So this movie came out, you'll tell everybody in a minute, 1986. So I did not see it in theaters, but when I got to college that fall of that year, the gang that I hung out with just would not stop talking about this movie. Because they were all neighbors and friends and stuff here in Atlanta before they moved down to Auburn. And so I didn't actually see it for another year or two when it came out on VHS, if you remember what that is.
I remember it well.
I remember it well, having to rewind those tapes.
And so we watched it just a billion times. Mm-hmm. And it's so much fun. I love the concept. And we've just seen it. I've watched it 100 times. I mean, I really didn't even have to watch it before today, because there was a point where I could just quote every single line, mm-hmm. as you could tell, from this movie.
That's me with the Incredibles.
We'll have an incredible battle someday.
It's just a pocket. Like, and that's the thing too, is this movie for me took a lot of time to digest, because I watched it and I was like, by the end of it, I was like, yeah, this is pretty good. I got it. And now that I was in the car, like, and last night I was thinking back on the movie, and I was like, yeah. And I can understand how, like, once you get it, that this becomes a pocket pick movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because it's just a fun adventure.
Exactly. It's not super serious. Mm-hmm. It does have some very poignant moments. It's got some freaking hilarious moments.
It's classic. It has a lot of classic 80s camp. Very campy.
Car chases.
Yes.
You know.
Crazy backhand springs all over the place.
Oh my God.
I loved that. That was so fun. As soon as that happened, they're both freaking out. And I'm just sitting there beaming like, oh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be a fun one.
The question we should ask first is, how much did you all drink before?
Oh, nothing.
Nothing.
I was stone cold sober.
Sober.
Oh, stone cold sober.
I seriously considered not doing that, but by the time we were sitting down to start it, I was like, nah, it's too late. We're just gonna start the movie.
Yeah.
But as I was watching it,
almost drove her to drink.
Honestly, it almost. but
it's clean shaven now. Don't worry.
Yes. It's a pretty good prank. She didn't think so, but I...
No, because then when I called him out and was like, you only did this to piss me off, he was like, that's not the reason I did it. And I was like, don't you do that to me, Tyler. I know your tricks
good catch,
here.
Good catch.
Anyways, back to the movie.
So, as he said, this came out in 1986. It was directed by Russell, is it Mulcahy?
I think so.
Written by Peter Bellwood and Larry Ferguson, based on the story written by Greg Wyden, and stars Christopher Lambert as Connor McLeod and Sean Connery as Ramirez. You can watch this on HBO Max and Peacock, or you can buy or rent it on Prime Video, Vudu, Apple TV, YouTube, Google Play, and tons of other places. And the IMDb summary for this says, an immortal Scottish swordsman must confront the last of his immortal opponent, a murderously brutal barbarian who lusts for the fate prize, Samuel.
So, our director, Russell Mulcahy, I only knew one other film he's done. So tell me if y'all know any of these movies. Razorback.
I've heard of it.
He did direct the second Highlander.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a second one?
Yeah.
No, there is not. You will never, ever hear me agree that there was ever any. There can be only one. This is the only movie in this universe.
Now, okay. If we talk about, like, you know, a potential second movie in the ether.
Was it that bad?
Oh, my God.
It's called Highlander 2, The Quickening.
The Quickening.
Yes.
We can talk about it later. I don't want
to... We're not going to ruin this this episode for Rick by talking about that.
Oh, no, that's dreadful.
So, he also directed the movie The Real McCoy.
Yes. That I've heard of. I haven't seen it.
I know the phrase, but I don't know the movie. He directed the movie The Shadow, Tale of the Mummy, which is not part of the Mummy franchise.
Interesting.
And then the only film that I actually knew of, Resident Evil Extinction.
Oh.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Our writers is a very similar thing. I don't know most of their films, except for Larry Ferguson. I know some of his stuff. But Greg Wyden wrote a movie called Backdraft, a movie called The Prophecy.
Wait. Some movie called Backdraft?
Ooh.
I have no idea what Backdraft is.
Oh, no Backdraft?
No. That's a fantastic movie. Fantastic movie.
Awesome.
I can't believe you're sleeping on Backdraft.
Great movie. Really, really good.
I haven't seen it either.
No, I haven't seen it.
I was like, Tyler, you're just gaslighting him over here.
You're gaslighting him.
Oh.
It's got some... Kurt Russell is in it. Huh. Lots of big names.
Kurt Russell was almost in this movie, apparently. Yeah. Oh, really? He was almost Connor McLeod.
Oh,
But he also wrote Tales from the Crypt, which I feel like I've heard of, but also haven't seen.
Oh, yeah. What? He wrote Tales from the Crypt?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not playing. That one's actually pretty cool.
Okay, cool. Larry Ferguson wrote Beverly Hills Cop 2. The second one.
I really thought you were going to say Beverly
sequel.
Hills
that's
Chihuahua, and I
that's
was about
an acceptable
to
freak out.
That one's allowed to exist.
He wrote The Hunt for Red October, which, of course, you know of. He
one
wrote
Ping Only, Vasily.
He wrote Alien 3.
Oh, let's go Alien 3.
And he wrote Maximum Risk.
I don't know that.
No, I don't know
that.
And then Peter Bellwood did not have a Wikipedia, but he did have an IMDb. And the only things on his filmography are he wrote a short film called Phobia. He wrote St. Helens about the it's like a volcano disaster movie. Mount St. Helens. And then he wrote Highlander 2, and he wrote Malevolent.
Malevolent?
Not Maleficent.
Malevolent. No, I've heard of that. Because there's Malignant and
not.
There's Malevolent.
I haven't either.
I've heard of it. I just haven't seen it. So as soon as you said that, it perked my little ears up.
Can we flip that and get a sound bite? Can my text message alert me? It perked my little ears up.
Guys, I did not get much sleep last night, and so trying to do this is very difficult. So, like, all of my words are, like, coming out faster than my brain can work, and so there's some crazy words that are probably going to come out of my mouth
there
in this
truly
episode.
Isn't a way.
There isn't really a great filter today. Okay, so before we dive into the plot, does anybody have any broad strokes things they want to talk about before we jump in here?
Yes, this movie was weird. I went into this completely blind. I didn't know what to expect, and you definitely have to find the rhythm. You know what I mean? It's like coming into like this crazy symphony where it's just like, ooh, I can't figure out the beat, and then once you get on the tempo and you start rocking with it, you're like, I know exactly how to appreciate this movie, and I love it.
Well, and I think that echoes the general reception of the movie because it did not get big box office in the theater.
Oh,
really,
no, it
but
did not.
It built. It's a cult movie at this point, right? It's
similar.
I
would have
guessed that. I thought it was successful from
the get-go.
Even with Sean Connery.
We'll get into
the
numbers,
marquee,
but
you know?
Oh, and then
it. But on the other hand, it did spark. several alleged sequel movies and a TV series.
Yes.
And an animated TV series.
Really?
So the people, what? Like you said, they kind of got into it and they're like, you know, they're figuring out what is this mythology of immortals and how did this all work?
Well, because the novelization goes into a bunch of other stuff that I'll talk about in the fun facts. And like, the concept itself is a really cool concept.
Right.
And, like, and so as I'm watching it, I literally had a moment where I was like, this concept's pretty cool. I'm into it. Like, I love that kind of, you know, I've mentioned it several times, but there's a graphic novel series that I really like that isn't like immortals just living through time, but it's like constantly like gods reincarnated every like 100 years. Mm-hmm. So it's like a similar kind of concept, and those kinds of things are always just like super interesting to me. So this specifically, I was like, this is really cool. But we can go ahead and dive in here. Which before
John was trying to say something.
I'm so sorry. Yeah,
you're fine. It's a really cool concept. That was my first initial response, is that this is a really cool concept. That's where, you know, 30 minutes in. But it was a cool concept that was being shot out of a grenade launcher. Because I wasn't quite sure.
That's a great way to put it, John.
I wasn't quite sure where I was landing. They were very, because at first I'm like, how is this a wrestling movie? I'm not quite understanding.
It actually kind of pulls the Arsenic and Old Lace, where it shows you a random sporting event at the beginning of the movie that is never seen again.
Nothing new. It's like, it's a wrestling movie. I'm like, oh, okay. And then we get the flashback into the past. Then we get a flashback into the past. I'm like, oh, this is like a generation, like blood feud kind of thing, where the war continues past generations. The whole, you know, Hatfield and McCoy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of McCoy.
Yeah. But then we get to, and then I'm like, is this a buddy cop movie? What's happening?
It kind of bounces all over the place.
It really does. It's a cool concept being shot out of a grenade launcher. Yeah.
No, I was going to say to Tyler, the fact that you couldn't keep up with this movie, but you could keep up with Cloud Atlas is very interesting to me, because
Cloud Atlas
is just as insane.
It is, and it was the same thing for me, because it was the same, like, ooh, what is this? I'm still watching, because like, I'm interested, but I don't get it. I get it. And as soon as I get it, I rewatch it a billion times. I was like, yeah, this movie's one of the greats, in my opinion.
Well, let's go ahead and dive into this. So, in 1985, Connor McLeod is confronted by an old enemy. I don't know if it's Iman or Iman, Fasil, in the parking garage of Madison Square Garden. In a sword duel, which you should have heard the reactions from Samuel and Tyler when they pulled swords out of their jackets, their reactions were priceless.
Yeah.
It was so funny, because the second that, like, just from nowhere, he just pulls a katana, it was so funny. They both out loud, like, screamed, what? Like, at the top of their lungs, what is happening?
We got Samuel over here just like, let's go Scottish glamour, and I'm just like, a katana? Why does he have that?
And then as they're fighting, it's like constant flips and handsprings, and it's
for
just
no
more
reason.
Crazy
whatsoever.
Reactions.
He's just doing back handstrings in the background. He's looking for a sword. He's... It's like, what's happening?
One thing we should mention for the audience is we did all watch the director's cut.
Yes. So if you watch the
except
theatrical...
Except for maybe John.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh.
Did you see the back handsprings or did you not?
I don't remember.
What service did you watch it on?
YouTube, probably.
I watched it for free on YouTube.
Okay. Well, there may be some stuff we talk about that you don't.
Yeah, because if you don't remember the back handsprings, that wasn't in the theatrical cut. It was only in the director's cut.
I think I remember seeing the.
You would remember it.
It's like this old man who can barely move in the front shots, but then suddenly he can do back handsprings. It's insane.
And there's just a whole shot of it's like a long shot of him just.
Just backhand. It's all the way down the parking garage. Oh my gosh, it was so funny. And that was the moment when I was like, I don't even know what's happening, but
I'm
enjoying it.
I'm in strapping. This is gonna be a ride.
Oh my gosh, so funny. He beheads Fasil and triggers a quickening, a powerful energy release that affects the immediate surroundings, destroying many cars. After Connor hides his katana in the garage's ceiling, I didn't know that that's what it was either. Thank you, Wikipedia. Apparently, that's what it is that the quickening he was talking about in the running on the beach scene.
Yeah.
was apparently, like, feeling the other lives inside you, I guess, those other lives. And so, like, the quickening is when you take them in. And then he was like, because he kept saying, like, do you feel him? Because he had taken in that life.
I thought he was
It's also not a moose. It was a stag. It was not a moose.
That was 2 weeks ago. That was a different
moose. I thought he was talking about the stag.
I think
part of the mythology here is that these immortal guys have this almost a force kind of thing where they can feel life and everything. But definitely, when you kill an immortal, you absorb their power.
And I got that. So, I got that. As soon as he kills them, and then everything starts going electric, it's like, okay, I get this boogie woogie woogie.
And they're cutting through metal and concrete with their swords.
Oh my god!
I have a thing about that. When we get to the fun fact section, I actually have one of my own.
Tyler bringing a fun fact.
What? Doing research?
If it's swords, yeah, I come to play. Okay, I don't mess around.
Well, he hides his katana in the garage's ceiling. NYPD officers detain him for murder, but later release him due to lack of evidence.
The funniest part
as he fights them.
The funniest part is that he could have walked out and been fine. The only reason he got arrested initially was because he was driving out like a madman. If he had just gotten in a car and just casually driven out. Yeah.
I mean, if you're an immortal, what does it matter?
That's true. It doesn't
matter.
He just,
like, punched the cop in the face and, like, he did a lot of violence against cops and he just walked. They're like, no, he walks.
He can leave.
He does?
Really?
He just punched you in the mouth.
Maybe he was high on life force, man.
he had just taken in a bunch of life force.
Oh my,
it's like PCP. Suddenly you just can't hold back.
It's like PCP.
Woo! It's like being PCP, an immortal boy. God is like PCP.
Well, in flashbacks, we see 18-year-old Connor living in the Scottish Highlands in 1536. And Samuel... Okay. So through this whole movie, because it's Scotland, Samuel keeps... So at one point, he was like, so this is 1536, huh? All right, so that was right after this guy lived in history. Let me see if this is going to be historically accurate. And I was just like, okay, history flex. Like, just over in the corner.
Look, Scottish history is part of my whole thing, okay?
He was just like, that's after this guy lived. So, like, let's see if this is accurate. Samuel's a history
professor. I was impressed that they actually... From what I could tell, and I might be off, but it looked like they did all of the plaid and tartans right. Unlike Braveheart, who completely messed all of that up. So,
and props then he on also, at one point, there was a castle in the background where he was like, oh, I've been there. And
I've been to that castle.
And he even showed a picture of where he went and was like, yeah, this was it. And it's that exact castle. And so through the whole movie, the meme became, hey, Samuel's been there.
Yeah, every time there's a new landscape shot, I'm like, hey, Tyler, I've been there.
It's in New York. It's like, Samuel's been there.
We do that too. Like, there's a scene in, is it Endgame or Infinity War, where they shot a bunch of Infinity War in Edinburgh. And when we were in Edinburgh, I actually got pictures of ourselves in those locations.
No way!
Nice. Fight scene with, like, Vision and Scarlet Witch and all. Yeah. That's like cool. One of the opening scenes.
Oh, that's right.
That's downtown Edinburgh.
Oh, that's so cool.
Nice. Where was I? Yes. So he is about to fight his first battle as the MacLeod clan is at war with the Fraser clan. I don't know if it's Fraser or Frasier.
Frasier.
Okay. So the Frasers are aided by a mysterious warrior, the Kurgan, in exchange for his right to slay Connor. In the battle, the Kurgan fatally wounds Connor, but is driven off before he can decapitate him.
Another time, MacLeod!
Inexplicably...
The amazing Clancy Brown, who is the best part of this film, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. I've got a whole page on Clancy Brown right there.
He's so good.
He just chews the scenery in the best amount. You know what I mean? It wasn't too much, but he steered into the camp to the
John,
point where it's
you
like,
know,
this is
you know who he is, right? From,
Yes, he's not only done a thousand different voices for a lot of the greatest characters.
Yeah.
But, dude,
He's your boy, Darth Maul's brother from the Clone Wars. That's what I know him from the most.
Yeah, Savage.
So, yeah,
he's Mr. Krabs.
Yep. He is Mr. Krabs.
He's Mr. Krabs?
He's Mr. Krabs, dude. He's the voice of Mr.
That
Krabs.
That I did not know.
I also did not know that. That's awesome. No, Yeah, the only thing I'll say is in the fun facts, I saw that apparently people were a little afraid to go near him during production because he was a little method, and he kind of became the Kurgan like a little bit. Well, that's the only thing where I'm like, that's a little cursed.
It's interesting because I read this article that said he actually wanted to play the Kurgan as more restrained. He wanted to be, it's like, he's the bad guy, but he just wants everything to end.
More like a noble warrior, like Terminator type.
I'm done with this. I want to get it, rather than Psycho Killer.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So,
but I don't know.
That would have been a very interesting choice.
Psycho Killer was fun, though.
Pretty fun.
It was so much fun.
I also don't think, like, I don't think we should write method actors off as cringe just because they have the M word.
If you're making everyone uncomfortable on set, yes, that's where it's cringe.
Robert Pattinson had a great quote a couple of months ago where they were asking about method actors, and he was all like, "You noticed that nobody is a method actor when they're playing a nice character."
The only time you hear
method actors are the ones who are playing assholes, and he was all like, and I think that says a lot.
Yeah.
Because essentially what he was trying to get at is it's people who want to act like that, taking the opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what's cringe. Method acting, I don't think it's the best acting method, but whatever works for you. But as soon as you start mistreating other people, I got no patience for it.
And with that, I agree. I agree. Yeah. There is some limits.
There's a healthy way to go about doing it. Unhealthy way for both you and your castmates.
Exactly.
That is just not beneficial.
My fair share of horror.
Yeah. I just want to go ahead and throw that in there because I didn't want it to become like the worship hour of his just because I knew that. So I was like, let me just toss this in really quick.
This is also I think like his second or third movie I'm not saying screw him, I'm just saying this wasn't the best way to go.
Clancy Brown doing method acting is Mr. Krabs in the voice studio.
Oh my god, he's method acting.
I want money.
Holy crap.
Yeah, Clancy, do you want to come in and do another season of SpongeBob? I like money. All right, Clancy.
Well, inexplicably, Connor makes a complete recovery, compelling his lover and his cousin to accuse him of witchcraft.
Those are two different people. Just to be clear to the people
his
on the
cousin
podcast.
Is not his lover. Yes. They are two different characters.
And boy, didn't Kate turn on him quick.
So fast. That hurt my heart.
That was like,
I hated
whoa.
That.
Because she was like so broken when he died, and I was like, she's going to be happy that he's back. Like, I'd be happy. And then and then she's like, save him.
With Lucifer.
And I was just like, whoa.
It's like, get him out of here. Get him
also,
out.
Also, the Scottish accents were pretty rough.
Yeah.
A couple of them.
Some were better than others.
Yeah. A couple of them weren't bad, but some of them were rough.
Yeah, but let's go Angus for being the absolute legend.
Angus
being the MVP,
setting him free. Like, get out of here, bro.
I mean, not that it would have mattered, but, you know.
Right.
But also, he didn't know that he was, like, immortal. He thought it was just some crazy thing that had happened at that point.
Still, Angus is the goat.
Yes. The clan wishes to kill him, but his other cousin, Chieftain Angus, mercifully exiles him. Connor wanders the Highlands, becomes a blacksmith, and marries a woman named Heather MacDonald. In 1541,
she was a stunning
woman, straight up.
Oh, I got the girls confused because there was one that you did not feel the same way about.
Correct.
And I thought you were talking about her. I was just like, you.
No.
Yeah.
Kate was the psycho. Heather's the love of his life.
Yeah. Heather is the love of his life. Yes.
Yeah, she was great.
Yes.
That's what I definitely said.
So
that
in,
was a great storyline.
I agree. In 1541, Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez,
chief metallurgist to King Charles V of Spain.
Yes.
I love that he knows that.
So awesome.
A 2,437-year-old swordsman from Egypt finds Connor after tracking his old foe, the Kurgan, to Scotland. He explains that he, Connor, the Kurgan, and others like them were born immortals and are destined to battle each other, save on holy ground.
In the classic 80s Raiders of the Lost Ark fashion of casting British dudes as Egyptians.
Yeah, for real.
So in this movie, you had basically a French guy cast as a Scotsman.
Yes.
Scotsman cast as an Egyptian from Spain. And an American cast as a Russian.
Yep.
Yes.
Let's go.
Yes.
And I don't know if you have this in your fun facts, but we can talk about it now.
Talking about Christopher Lambert?
Yeah.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
All right, I'll save it.
It's okay. We can save it. Yeah. Because I think it also will help explain a lot when we get there. Yes. So, under the overriding belief of all immortals, in the end there can only be one, the few who shall be left will be drawn to a faraway land for the gathering, the final battle for the prize, the power of all the immortals through time. Ramirez reveals that immortals cannot have children and believes they must ensure evil people like the Kurgan do not win the prize, or else humanity will suffer an eternity of darkness. I thought you were going to say something. That's why I paused.
I'm just nodding along.
Okay. You just did a thing that's usually your tell where you, like, sat up straight. Stop breathing so much.
Hold still.
Ramirez trains McLeod, and the two become friends. One night, while Connor is away, the Kurgan finds his home. There, Kurgan decapitates Ramirez and leaves the area.
That was awful. But then the whole training sequence, too... which was equal parts fun as it was hard to watch.
Because
we gotta talk about it.
there were fleeting moments where the sword fighting was like, oh, okay, let's go. And then there were obvious moments where the guy who played Nash just like straight up missed most of his marks, and a lot of it was fencing. Oh my God, the guy Ramirez.
Sean Connery.
Lord have mercy. My brain broke. That was painful for me as it was for you. Enjoy how, listeners. So Sean Connery, little known actor Sean Connery. I mean, every time they were fencing, he just like was genuinely missing his marks, and I'm just like, how did this get into the final cut? But outside of that, like, there were so many like fun set pieces that it just, even though this movie is kind of about sword fighting, I didn't really care. Like, it was something that stood out to me, and it's definitely knocked off some points in the final production, but like, I didn't really care. It was still fun, you know what I mean? Because you're still watching these characters do their character things.
Well, and Clancy, I feel like, and there may be a reason for this that I can get into, but I personally felt like out of the main actors who had to wield swords, he was the best one.
100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah, like he absolutely had at least the smoothness down of like...
Sean Connery also looks pretty comfortable with the sword. It was mostly... Christopher Lambert.
It was mostly Christopher Lambert.
It was mostly him that was kind of painful sometimes.
Because even when, you know, he's doing that whole thing that Tyler was just... Tyler and Samuel, again, their reactions to him assembling his sword.
That was...
And clipping in the blade.
Like, that's not how to sword.
I wanted to
the little switchblade and the little quillings came up. I was
listening
like, oh
to
my
them
God.
While that scene played was a glorious moment in time. It was so funny.
Here's the thing, though. I don't like. It was obviously we're gonna laugh and make fun of it, but I really do like the concept of like a futuristic sword that like can be like a composite kind of sword, like where you just put the pieces together. I think that's a really cool concept. It just didn't. Because it's not a future movie, right? This is you know, in the 80s.
Well,
like,
and to be fair, he hadn't figured the movie out at that point. Vax. So when that scene came up, it was just more stuff for him to be confused about. So it was
maybe
just piling
on. Maybe
you should
have been a little drunk before you watched this movie. That may have helped.
I'm not allowed to.
No,
he's
on a straight edge kick.
Yeah, I'm 3 weeks sober.
All right,
I'm like full on no more alcohol for a little bit. So. All
right. Yeah, he. So that whole thing happened. Yeah. But I do think he looked, even in that little sequence just in the room where he's like, you know, swinging it around and just doing like forms and stuff. He looked very comfortable the whole time, like as he was swirling it around. Yeah. And I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, you know. At the very least, he looks comfortable, so that was good.
And you find out he likes candy, so...
You find out he likes candy, apparently.
Oh my gosh, that bit, that whole bit. Just him being in that...
He has so many good lines.
Dude, she walked in and I was like, where is Candace when we need her? Where is she? She would have screamed.
Jumping ahead a little bit, when he just walked up to the guy and he's just like... Don't ever speak to me. I'm like, dude.
Never speak to me again.
Oh my gosh.
Awesome. I love the banter between the clerk and that one like homeless dude that's just chilling inside.
No, I don't think we're there yet. Where
no.
are we? Training sequence. Oh, yes. No.
He just killed Ramirez in an insane scene where, again, the swords destroy a castle.
Well, the castle was made out of styrofoam.
They crash into the stones and the castle just falls apart. And at one point, it falls in a complete straight line, like where clearly the top of the set was. And so they couldn't knock any, like, other pieces away. Oh, that was so funny.
As I gotta be honest, though, as, like, obviously silly as that was one of my favorite scenes in the movie. I loved it. Because it was so silly.
I couldn't tell,
because, like,
the whole time he just kept going, what? The entire scene. I couldn't tell if it was your favorite or your least favorite.
The lines and stuff between Ramirez and the Kurgan through all of that. I mean, it was good.
Epic. Oh, yeah. And then at the very end, that last shot where just the staircase is there, and then you see them, like, silhouetted, like, in the lightning. Like, that was really... I'm like, this is cool.
There were some really good cinematography.
There were some really good shots in there. I remember we noticed it at the beginning whenever the guy's glasses fell on the ground and you just see in the glasses the guy, like, running away. We
super
were like, that's
80s
a cool
cinematography.
Shot.
That's even watching the opening sequence, I turned to them and I was like, man, y'all have to watch Lethal Weapon. Because even just the opening sequence felt so Lethal Weapon.
The match cuts they used were insane. They were incomprehensible.
The face into the billboard.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Tyler was sitting over there like, what are the, my favorite transition. It made me out loud laugh. And it made Samuel laugh too. It was my favorite. It was right after, I'm jumping way ahead, but it was the sex scene between the two of them that goes right into a roaring lion. Right into a roaring lion. And we all scream laughed because I was like, I notoriously don't really love sex scenes in movies just because I'm like, why? But unless it has like a serious purpose, because most of the time it just seems gratuitous to me.
But this was the
80s. No, this was gratuitous.
And so I'm sitting there and I'm just kind of like, you know, okay, I'm gonna ride it out, and then here comes a lion, like, and it just surprised me so much that I was like, I think this might be my favorite sex scene in any movie because of that smash cut from them in bed to roaring lion was so funny. Oh my gosh,
the anxiety I had for Heather that whole fight sequence was insane.
Well,
because
also,
I kept genuinely thinking, like,
why did she stay?
The Billy's gonna crush her. That's gonna be it. He's not going to have a wife by the end of it.
It was such a theme of the movie of the women always just stuck around during the fights instead of just walking off.
Why don't you just leave? Get out of there. Oh my goodness, no. But yes, so years later, Heather dies of old age, prompting Connor to wander the earth, adopting Ramirez's katana as his own after using his old sword as her grave marker. Which, their whole story,
Did you not cry when she died?
It was such a sweet scene. I didn't cry, but it was
sad. But it was very sweet.
It was very sweet, a very bittersweet moment. And honestly, it reminded me that specific scene as she says, where are we? And he's like, oh, we're in the Highlands. And is telling her this beautiful story of where they are in their final moments. And, like, you know, that isn't, like, real.
That's
reminded me.
That was that moment.
Well, it reminded me of the end of Big Fish. Of, like, where his dad is like, tell me how it ends, and his son tells him, like, just exactly the way his dad would want his story to end. Not in a hospital bed, but just this big adventure. And that's what that reminded me of, and I was like, that is gorgeous.
Well,
the
other funny part of it to me too was it was almost identical to unknowingly to a backstory I just wrote for a D&D character. Like, that just that part of the storyline, like, the same thing as something I just wrote for a D&D character, like, last week.
I thought the same thing.
The other part about this particular scene, and this is a larger theme maybe we discuss later, but the soundtrack right here, the song that Brian May wrote for this scene, was just spectacular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, the lyrics, there's no time for us, there's no place for us. You know, it's just a beautiful, beautiful song.
Yeah.
The use of Queen throughout
that?
Like, was awesome.
So here's the deal. They were signed up to do the opening song.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was it.
Okay.
Then they saw the movie and they're like, no, no, no. we're doing the whole thing.
No way.
Really? So they went off and each one of them wrote different songs throughout the whole
movie. So every song in there was written for Highlander?
Every song?
I know Who Wants to Live Forever was written for the movie. Yeah. I know that.
No way.
Because that was in the fun facts. I don't know if I put it in there, but that was in the fun facts that the guy...
Gimme the Prize.
Yes.
Princess of the Universe.
Mm-hmm.
That opening...
Yeah, the guy was like riding home from seeing the movie and was like, I'm writing this song, Who Wants to Live Forever, for this scene because it's good. So she dies of old age. In 1985, the time of the gathering approaches, and the Kurgan is compelled to come to New York, where Connor now lives as an antique dealer under the alias Russell Nash, working with his confidant and adopted daughter, Rachel Ellenstein, whom Connor saves from the Nazis during the Second World War.
That storyline was really cool.
I loved Rachel's whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, straight up. She was my favorite.
And none of that appeared in the theatrical.
I know!
Are you serious?
Really?
Yeah. Oh!
You didn't get to see him killing Nazis?
No, I did.
Okay, then he saw the right one.
So then you saw...
Yes, so you saw the right
one. I cannot stress enough, the first 30 minutes of that movie, again, beautiful concept, shot out of a grenade launcher. I was a little stunned for the first 10 minutes of this film. But I did see him shoot up the Nazi and save Rachel and everything.
Yes. Okay, no, I loved all of her stuff. That concept was so cool. Of him just like, you know, essentially adopting this girl. Excuse me. Essentially adopting this girl and then having to watch her age as like, you know, as he stays the exact same. It's a totally different kind of like bittersweet from like, wow.
Wow.
What? I have to get my stuff. What am I supposed to do? Not be a human? I have to be a human. That's all I can be.
You sure about that?
I can't be a toad.
Russell Tracy, like I can't be a toad, ladies and gentlemen.
Boy, Sam's gonna struggle.
Oh my god, yeah. BannerBox merch. I can't be a toad.
It's gonna be a fun little
segment. Yes.
We were talking about the Rachel scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
Where's Rachel?
So Brenda Wyatt, a metallurgy expert and forensic scientist, finds shards of Connor's sword at Fossil's murder scene. The shards come from a Japanese sword dated around 600 BC, but made with medieval-era methods. Mm-hmm. Brenda witnesses...
Awesome,
yes. Brenda witnesses the Kurgan attack... the Kurgan attack Connor before police arrive, forcing them to flee. She meets with Connor twice afterwards, hoping to learn about the strange sword. Connor likes her, but tells her to leave him alone, which I don't know why she didn't. the whole time, so I said it to them. I was like, if I met a guy who acted like this, I would assume serial killer.
Mm.
Because he was giving off serious serial killer vibes, like, especially in her apartment the whole time. Like, in her apartment, at one point, he's like, yeah, the recorder, the gun you have over there, the policeman outside. Oh my gosh, run! Why are you not running? And she's just like, she empties the gun and is like, I just want to see the sword. And I'm like, bro, this woman is not smart.
I thought one of the funniest things was when they're leaving the bar and, you know, he's fighting the Kurgan with a piece of steel pipe or something, right? And then the police helicopter comes.
Oh my god!
Hey, stop!
Wait, come back!
No. What are you doing? Come back!
It's like, why did they stop
that
fighting?
That was so funny. Oh my gosh.
The cops in this movie are just insanely incompetent. And it's such a good gag.
Oh my gosh.
What does baffled mean?
Oh, it was so funny, dude.
What does incompetent mean?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. That cracked me up. It was just like so, it was such a, these guys can't kill each other yet, so how can they be interrupted? Police helicopter? Oh my gosh. It was so good. Meanwhile, the Kurgan duels and beheads Sunda Castigir, another immortal. Okay. Mm-hmm. Brenda finds evidence that Connor has lived for centuries, faking his death every so often and living at the same address for nearly 300 years.
We kind of skipped over the whole duel with Lord Bassett.
Go ahead.
So after, you know, he and Castigir meet on the bridge in Central Park.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
The duel with
The funniest duel that in was the whole movie.
Where he keeps stabbing him and stabbing him. And then he shoots
his second.
His second, who had been like, who had been loving all over him the whole time. They were
kissing him on the cheek. And
not even just on the cheek. At one point, he straight up like kisses him on the mouth, and then he keeps trying to kiss him on the mouth, and the guy is like, stop trying to like do that. And so at the end, the guy's running away, and he just shoots him. And he does it so, he's like, I'll give him a second to run. I'll give him a second to run. Dead. And I was just like, oh my gosh.
That was incomprehensible, but...
It was so funny.
His name is Lord Castagir?
Castagir was the immortal. The guy he was dueling with was Lord Bassett.
Bassett. Lord Bassett's drip. That coat, I went out of my way to be like, bro, that is one of the finest coats I've ever seen, and I want one so bad it's not even funny. That entire fight scene was incredible.
That's one of my favorite lines in the whole movie was, stop, sir, I beseech you. I apologize for calling your wife a bloated warthog, and I bid you good day.
And just walks away.
He's like, the guy's just like dumbfounded at what's just happened.
He stabbed him 40 times or whatever.
Shoot him in the back of the head.
Oh my gosh. Oh, so funny. Oh my gosh. But yes, so... On Heather's birthday, Connor lights a candle for her in a church, as he has done every year. The Kurgan arrives and confirms that he and Connor are now the last remaining immortals, and also reveals that... I don't like that word. He assaulted Heather the night he killed Ramirez. Disgusted, but prohibited from fighting on holy ground, Connor leaves. Brenda confronts Connor, who explains his true identity, which this was the scene that Samuel was like, that was a cool shot. And I was like, I got dizzy in that shot, which was the camera from the ceiling panning as she walked around.
Oh, I love that.
I got so dizzy, because it was kind of out of focus. And the fact that it was kind of out of focus and spinning the whole time. I got so dizzy.
Yeah.
But yes, so he explains his true identity. After spending the night together, they part company on account of Connor's immortality.
Wait, hold on. So Samuel, Samuel, when booting up the movie, it says, what was it, PG-13?
It says rated R for brief nudity.
And so he looks at me and he goes, what do you think? Do you think the nudity's... It's an 80s film. It's an 80s flick. Do you think it's going to be the male or the female? And I'm like, I'm going to go with the safe bet. I think it's going to be the girl. And he's like, I don't know. I think it's going to be the guy.
I was thinking Braveheart style.
So we're sitting here, we're watching it, and nothing crazy, and then they start getting together, and I'm like, oh, here we go, let's see, roll the dice, baby, what we got? And then we saw a nipple, I'm like, yeah, let's go! And then Danielle's over here, the girl gets on top of him.
But I thought it was still the guy on top, so I'm like, oh, no, we see his butt, and then it turned out to not be his butt, but then it was
his butt. But then you
did
see his butt,
well, that was the bet, because that's the part that we're crossing over. She's like, there's his ass. We could say ass, right? And there's his ass. And I'm just like, wait, I don't know. And then he rolls over, and then he gets on top, and I'm like, it was her. It was her ass.
And I'm like, but now it's his, and so we both win.
It was incomprehensible.
I don't know if I'd call it brief nudity.
No, but it went on for a little bit, and that's why the lion cut was so funny.
I was inspired.
The whole scene at the zoo was not in the original cut either.
Oh, okay. Really?
Yeah. But,
yeah.
You know, that was a good scene. Him just like walking out
of the
background.
He just stands there and then goes back out of the background, and then there's a solid 3 seconds, and then Connor whips around and looks, and
he's
there's
like,
nothing
huh?
there. Oh, so funny. But, yes, so, however, the Kurgan finds out about their newfound intimacy and kidnaps Brenda to draw Connor out. Connor decides it is time to leave behind... Connor decides it is time to leave behind the Russell Nash identity, says goodbye to Rachel, and confronts the Kurgan in Queens, rescuing Brenda in the process.
He goes on a joyride.
It was a straight up joyride.
It was
joyride.
So much fun. How many times he was just like, ah, just like letting his hands go on the road.
He's putting his hands over his eyes and
straight up psychotic.
Just taunting this one.
Oh, it was so fun. And then, when she's tied up to the sign, and they're fighting around the sign, and their swords are cutting through all the metal, and the sign's coming down, and all of that, and it makes no sense because she's handcuffed up to the sign, and then the sign falls over, and she climbs up and is no longer handcuffed.
Magic.
There's a lot of issues.
Poof.
Magic in there, yeah.
As a makeup person, I was having trouble with his neck wound and the safety pins, because I could see the shine of the strip of tape that was holding it to his neck, and I was like, I get it's the 80s, but come on, guys.
Speaking of, since we're talking about the final fight, how about the wire?
Yeah.
Whoa. The wire, the blatant wire that you could see?
Yes, you could see him floating in the air with a wire. Amazing. And we were like, dude.
Well, and you saw the safety cable that Brenda was wearing.
Yes, no, they talk about that in the fun facts, that whole like thing. But that's a whole other thing. But yes, so after a long duel, Connor decapitates the Kurgan, absorbing his power and winning.
Well,
the prize.
He didn't decapitate him really. He just kind of like reopened his neck wound. Like
his head kind of fell off.
Did his head come off?
Oh yeah.
So when he cut the neck off, like, or when he cut through the neck, it was like a clean cut, and as his head was like rolling back, I think that's when his head came off.
Okay, I didn't see
it was like nearly headless Nick style. He sliced most of it, and then it just kind of da-da-da-da-da and like fell off.
Okay, I didn't see it fall off. I just saw that it was like a half cut, and I was all like, does that count?
I also kind of thought it might be like he cut it so fast it's like a tablecloth thing and
that's
it didn't move.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I thought you said he just reopened
it. No,
it
cut
fell.
Clean through, and so it starts with the neck as his head's like
going back to the sinew.
Yeah. But yes, so he wins the prize. Connor returns to Scotland with Brenda and reveals that he is now a mortal man who can age and have children. He can also now read the thoughts and feelings of people all around the world. Remembering Ramirez's lessons, he hopes to encourage cooperation, understanding, and peace among humanity.
So at the end of the day, there can only be none.
And then there were none.
And then there were none.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
So my question then is, if Kurgan had killed him, would Kurgan have then become mortal?
Yeah.
But he would have been 1,000 years of darkness. Mm.
Yeah, but he would have known everything. He would have known everybody's thoughts. Oh. He could manipulate the entire
world. So that's
the
whole thing, yeah.
Rule the world for the rest of his life.
Yeah, is that he only has the rest of his life, but he could essentially
destroy
everything.
But now he's all powerful
and
that hard, so okay, I understand.
I don't know, that's kind of a raw deal.
Huh?
Rule the world for 40 years or live forever.
Yeah.
I was gonna say rule the world because the whole outliving people thing. Why do you keep what?
You
can
be immortalized in history.
Live forever.
Ramirez had three wives.
I get both arguments.
All I'm saying is Ramirez had three wives.
He did. He did have three wives.
Yeah, we talk about that one poor Marine.
During this
skipped
over
the Marine.
Dude. That poor Marine and that poor bystanding lady.
The grandma?
She calls Father, help me! Father, help me!
Mom. And you
see... Mom! That's what I want!
And you see her... He pulls out the corner and she's across the front of the car. Like, sprawled out. Like, my gosh.
Mom.
It was insane. That guy's crazy. But that was Highlander, guys. What would you guys rename this movie?
That's a good question.
I mean, Immortals makes sense. The Eternals.
No.
The
Eternals.
I still haven't finished that one.
I haven't even started it.
I haven't watched it, no.
I said, don't lose your head.
Detroit.
Okay.
Human.
Oh, my God.
Point Break.
I hate you.
No, I genuinely, fired. I mean, you know, Immortals is great. Who Wants to Live Forever is a safe pick. But it's also bad.
I mean,
so.
There Can Only Be One is also...
There Can Only Be One. The one.
And then there were none!
Oh, my God! Well played. That's actually good.
I'll say, mine was There Can Only Be One. I mean,
yeah.
It's just such an easy gimme.
Yeah, if we're not acknowledging that the second movie exists, honestly, The Quickening would be an interesting
They just never. My thought is they never refer to it as such in this movie.
Yeah, they do.
They do?
Yeah, the training sequence.
Ramirez talks about it a few times.
He calls it The Quickening twice.
Well, I'm just wrong.
Big fan.
You could call it Magic the Gathering.
Oh my
god! Oh wow!
I thought about calling it.
It's a kind of magic. He says that to the to Rachel.
Yeah,
it's a song.
It's a kind of.
It's a
kind
of magic.
Well,
lots of options.
Yes, lots of options. I went on Amazon. The general consensus is honestly not great. Only 53% of viewers rated it 5 stars. So I pulled one positive and one negative. What do y'all want first?
It's your positive first.
Okay.
Okay. So, this is, here it is. Okay, so this is from Koldobari, and this was a couple years ago, and it's titled, Quirky, but Still a Great Film After All of These Years. I remembered seeing this as a 10-year-old, and bought it after Sean Connery recently passed away.
What was that?
But just because, like, that was a full-on nude sex scene for a 10-year-old.
I'll say brief nudity didn't quite cover that one.
Yeah.
You gotta learn at some point.
It was a lot of
It was fun to revisit this many years later, with some aspects making a lot more sense. It's quirky, but a great film. Everyone seems to be having a really fun time with their roles. Christopher Lambert gave probably his best performance in this film. Sean Connery is great as the worldly and jaded ancient immortal teacher, and Clancy Brown is strangely impressive as his performance becomes more and more unhinged as the film goes on.
Correct.
Everyone was quite committed to what they were doing interpretively. I give it 5 stars.
I will agree with her on just about everything except for Christopher Lambert. Yeah. For me, he hurt the movie pretty substantially.
I did not enjoy his performance. But there is a reason. There is a reason that I'll get to in the fun facts.
He was not as great.
Yeah, there is. There's a genuine reason, but we'll get to it.
I'll find out.
So then I've got a negative one. This is from this is just an Amazon customer, and this was actually earlier this year.
Oh.
And it's titled Campy Classic 80s Flick. I am not sure why people
negative?
Correct.
Apparently.
That's just a fact.
No. Here we go. That's apparently an insult. I am not sure why people like this movie. The extended version is probably even worse than the original because it adds things that makes this movie even more laughable, like a bunch of flips to get away from a fight.
Shut up! That was the best part of the movie!
The dialogue and acting is bad, the fight sequences are cheesy and depend more on special effects and gags than good action.
Fair.
If getting stabbed by someone, then having sex with them, is not the most 80s thing there is, then this is the second most 80s movie out there. Worth it for a laugh, but man, is this movie bad. I think The Room might even be better than this one.
Shut up. People don't like fun things.
Yeah, people just want to be upset about things that are fun. So this one didn't get nominated or win any, like, major awards, but it did have some minor nominations for, like, little festivals and things like that.
Good for them.
Out of 100, what do you guys think this is rated critically on Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm going to guess not very good. I'm going to guess like 61%.
Okay.
I'm going 53.
Okay.
This is critically. I'll say perfect 60.
Okay.
Did you just Price is Right me?
Wait, what did you do?
He said 63.
No, he said 61.
Oh.
John?
Whoops. 5 immortals presented, 4 got decapitated. I'm going to say 54%.
Oof. Well, Samuel's the closest because it's higher than you think. It's actually 70%.
Oh, let's
so it's
go.
A little higher.
Yeah, awesome. It's not that bad.
And the audience score also out of 100.
That's probably going to be a lot higher if it's a cult favorite. So I'm going to guess 80%.
Okay.
78.
I'm going to come in at I don't want to Price is Right Samuel, but I'm going to come in at 81. I'm going to Price is Right.
Okay.
1783 is mentioned a lot, so I'm going to go 83%.
Are you trying to develop your own horse
method? He's trying to develop his own horse method. I will say, Rick and Samuel are tied because it was 79.
How
about
it? So
you're in the exact same place. And now the IMDb score out of 10.
7.1.
Okay.
6.2.
Okay.
7.6. I don't feel the horse method mojo today.
He doesn't feel
it
today.
I'm not going to try.
But there are so many horses.
There's so many horses.
There were a lot of horses.
You're correct, but I'm just not feeling it.
She's going to take a stab in the dark on this one. I'm just going to say 6.7.
Rick got it exactly. It is 7.1.
That's the first time I...
Zing!
Well, as we talked about a little bit earlier, so the budget, and this is kind of like estimated, this is the best I could find, was $19 million. Box office only made a little over $12
million.
So
no.
Was not a win in the box office.
But what about the in-home sales?
I don't know. I just know what the box office is.
I'm sure that over time they've made money off this film.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm sure eventually, yes. So getting into some of the fun facts. So all of Sean Connery's scenes had to be filmed in a week due to Connery's schedule. He had a bet with the director that they would not finish in 7 days, but the director won the bet and Connery earned $1 million for his week's work.
Well, wow. Imagine
work for a million.
For a million.
Speaking of Sean Connery and
there can be only 1 week.
1 million.
1 million in one week.
1 week, there could be only one. 1 million of that small budget too is insane.
In 86, I mean, a million.
Golly. Yeah.
That's a
I mean,
lot.
Sean Connery was so big, like, yeah. Like.
I'm sure they thought he was going to bring in a bunch of ticket sales.
So, Sean Connery's weapon is called a Masamune. What that is it's a specific type of katana made after the famous swords crafter Masamune, who studied under Muramasa. So there's actually a Japanese folklore. I won't get into the specifics, but essentially Muramasa is the greatest swordsman, the greatest swordsmaker of all time ever, period, and used methods that were completely unheard of for his time. Real guy. This is real guy. Now, granted, the tall tales might extrapolate on kind of like what his swords actually were able to do, but still. Made these incredible swords with techniques nobody knew, and he took on one apprentice, which was Masamune. And when Masamune made his fabled sword named after him, he challenged his master to a duel, because his master was just like, hey, you're focusing way too much on like rage and offense and anger as your center when these swords are made to like protect people.
This isn't the Jedi way.
Yeah. Exactly. And so he's like, these swords are made to like for like self-defense and like defending your country. It's not about rage and killing. And so they ended up fighting. Masamune won, and his actual blade is said to be cursed, that the wielder of the blade must get a certain amount of kills within time frame, or the blade, they will turn the blade on themselves. So the fact that Highlander, the sword
fighting
guy.
Sounds like my first character's backstory.
So the fact that Highlander, the sword fighting guy, had a Masamune, I just... thought was
well
cool.
What makes that more interesting is when Ramirez is telling his story about one of his wives.
Mm-hmm.
He got the sword from Masamune,
from her dad,
who is that was in the fun facts as like, you know, that was legit, like who Ramirez got it from was the real Masamune.
Yeah,
that's true. The real Ramirez actually got the sword.
Samuel loves to make things not fun. So this is the reason why Christopher Lambert was the weak link. He spoke no English.
Are you kidding me?
What?
Yeah. No
English.
Learned
English to be in this movie.
Yes.
And
the director didn't know that when he hired him.
Yeah.
He did not know that the guy didn't speak English. And so he had to learn English as well as learn how to do this accent. And that crazy accent.
I take it all back. His accent was amazing.
Well, yeah, his Scottish accent that he had to learn for when he was in the past, as well as his mix-up, which was a purposeful thing. They wanted him to just have a kind of mush
hodgepodge
of
accent
that couldn't really land anywhere.
I thought
anywhere.
They covered that really well. You know, in the police station
they
scenes.
They did.
Like, you got a funny accent, Nash. Where are you from?
And he's like, a lot of places.
A lot of places.
Yeah. So when I learned that, I was like, that actually makes a lot more sense as to why he felt like such a weak link.
Why did
because
they
he barely
hire him if he couldn't speak English?
Because Kurt Russell backed out.
Wow.
It was his eyes.
I was available, all I'm saying.
Remember the scene, again, still in the police station where I forget the cop's name, but he's trying to stare Nash down.
Yes. Garfield.
Garfield. Mm-hmm. And McLeod just... stares right back through his soul, you know, because he's got that structure on his face.
Yeah, he's got that gaze.
I think that was a big part of it.
Yeah,
probably.
I know Kurt Russell was originally cast, but actually, who was his woman at the time? I can't remember who
Goldie
he
Hawn?
Goldie Hawn told him to back out of it, and so like that's when they found
she was probably
Lambert.
Right.
well, I mean, you know, but yeah. So he had barely learned to speak like any English at this point. The only other English speaking movie he had been in at that point was Greystroke: The Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes, which was 2 years before.
Oh, where he had like God. Four lines.
Yeah, he had. Yeah, he spoke barely any words.
God.
So yeah, that should explain a. A lot of what his acting was in this, because he didn't speak the language.
That does explain a lot, actually.
According to the director, when they first shot the scene of Kurgan bursting through a door to cut the table in half, Clancy Brown instead ran in and cut through the candelabra, nearly decapitating Sean Connery.
Oh, God.
As a result, Connery, righteously, stormed off the set. Later, Connery returned and Brown apologized, saying he was very nervous, and Connery joked that he should use his stunt double more often.
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Get punched by
Robert Duvall. Oh, my gosh, yeah. The opening voiceover by Sean Connery has an echo effect, not on purpose, but because it was recorded in the bathroom of his Spanish villa where he had been working with a voice coach in order to perfect the Spanish accent he used in the movie. It was played for the producers over the phone, and that's why they approved of it, because they couldn't discern the quality over the phone.
Oh my god.
Let's go.
Which I thought was just very funny. The cast had such a good time doing the movie, they filmed additional scenes for free detailing McLeod's relationship with Rachel.
Aww.
So those scenes were actually they were just because they wanted the story fleshed out.
That's cool.
The opening shot sweeping through the stadium was accomplished using a computerized system that held the camera on four wires. The system was invented by the inventor of the Steadicam, Garrett Brown. So I thought that was pretty cool.
No, I bet that's the technology that they use now for football games.
Yeah.
Because they have the cameras that like hover above wires.
I think they've gone to drones for a lot of that.
That's actually possible.
Yeah, probably at this point. Yeah.
I know they've done the four cable thing a lot in the past.
They did it for a long time.
But it seems like those shots are getting much lower and closer to the players these days.
Yeah. So probably a drone. According to the director, the crew, and this is the thing I was saying, felt that Clancy Brown had become the Kurgan and some refused to go near him. While filming in the Scottish Highlands, the production's medical team were kept busy in the afternoons. After a liquid lunch, many of the local Scottish extras got a bit too enthusiastic during the clan battles, with many minor injuries resulting because they were all drunk.
That's, oh my god.
That's the most Scottish
thing. I was just going to say, could you be more Scottish?
The quickening is actually the term for when a baby in the womb shows its first sign of life, its first noticeable movement within the womb. Which I just thought was an interesting little term.
Well, all right then.
The Morgan note.
This might potentially disappoint you a little bit, Tyler. In preparation for this movie, Christopher Lambert trained extensively with Swordmaster and British Olympic fencer Bob Anderson.
Oh, Bob Anderson? Do you know who Bob Anderson is? You are not a real swordsman. Bob Anderson is the most prolific Hollywood swordsman. He did all of the original trilogy in Star Wars. He was in the Vader suit for all of the duels in the original trilogy. He did all the fight choreography for Pirates of the Caribbean. He choreographed the big fight in The Princess Bride.
He did all the
Lord of the Rings choreography.
Also, don't perk up. Wait, have you seen that scene in Princess Bride? Because you haven't seen the movie.
Of course.
You haven't seen Princess Bride?
He has not seen Princess Bride.
Hold on. We got to get through this one at a time. One, I've seen it a bajillion times. Okay. I had to watch it for when I was actually studying fencing.
He's seen the fight scene, not the movie.
Two, no, I haven't seen Princess Bride, and to everybody's shame, and I even went as far as to insult everybody by slipping in the Princess Bride marriage bit at their wedding.
Because we knew he hadn't seen the movie. We had told him about that scene like a couple months before, and when he slipped it in there, me and Samuel just look at each other and shake our heads because we're like, he hasn't even seen the movie.
Have you seen it?
You threw
it
son
into
of
the-
a bitch.
No, but it I felt like it would bum you out just a little bit that he had trained so much with that guy and it wasn't as impressive as like you had hoped it would be.
Yeah, it was pretty disappointing. Now, granted, if Sean Connery was missing his marks, then it also would make your boy look bad.
Of course, yeah.
And if Sean Connery's as big a star power as he is, it stands to reason that he didn't train as much as Man-Man. And then
Sean Connery has done so much short training in his career. I mean, he's had to do it so much.
I
would imagine that...
It is a shame, but it is what it is.
Who knows?
It is what it is. So this was really cool. The novelization delves into the Kurgan's backstory. His first death occurred in 970 BC when his drunken father crushed his head with a rock. Upon returning to life, the Kurgan proceeded to force his father to swallow a searing hot stone, killing him, made me think very Game of Thrones with that. Mm. He then went off to join a group of bandits that raided caravans. He eventually encountered another immortal. I don't really know how to say this word. Is it the Bedouin?
Yeah, Bedouin.
Bedouin. He revealed to him his true nature and who became the only person who could be labeled as his friend. During the intervening centuries, the Kurgan took an incalculable number of immortal heads. Circa 410 AD, the Kurgan joined the Vandals, Goths, and Visigoths in attacking Rome and other Roman settlements, also fighting with the Goths against the Huns. He would then later ally himself with the Huns directly, fighting alongside Attila around the year 450. From the 5th to 13th centuries, the Kurgan would spread terror with the, I don't really know how to say this word, T-A-T-A-R-S.
Oh, the Tartars?
Sure, Tartars of the Gobi and ancient Turkey, as well as with Viking raiders and the Mongol horde of Genghis Khan. So I just thought that was really cool that all throughout history, he was like, his story was essentially that he just passed through all of these different huge, like, wars and, like, conquerors mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. all of this stuff. I just thought that was really cool. And during the final fight sequence between MacLeod and Kurgan on the roof of Silver Cup Studios, cables can be seen in the foreground, pulling the studio's neon sign down.
Yep. Also, who saw that?
Yes. In post-production, they have bolts of electricity coursing down them to hide them. After filming had been completed, the production discovered that they had done so much damage to the set and the actual roof of Silver Cup Studios as to make retakes impossible.
Oh my god.
Wow.
So they actually, like, went to Silver Cup Studios.
That was actually the roof of the building.
Oh my god.
And they like, destroyed it.
Let's go 80s filmmaking.
That's funny.
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do, right?
We're into practical effects here.
Guys. Yes.
Movies are made in the gray area.
So, recasting time.
Oh, well, before we go on, I have a couple of other
Tell us your trivia.
So, you know, at the very beginning when he's fighting Fasil and they have their swords and they're like just, their swords are touching and sparking, they took a car battery.
Get out of here!
Hooked one sword to positive, one sword to negative. I just did make that effect.
If it works, it works.
They're holding the live sword.
I don't know who the safety officer
was. I was about to say, if Sam Marie had ever heard about that, she would murder everybody in the room.
She'd have a connection.
The other thing, I told you I wanted to bring up West Side Story. And I have no idea if Brian May did this consciously, but, you know, in Highlander, the lyrics are, there's no time for us, there's no place for us, etc. And in West Side Story, there's a song called Somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You guys familiar with West Side Story?
Oh, very much
familiar. Yeah, I'm kind of familiar, but I'm very familiar with the song Somewhere.
Right?
Yes.
And it's so, there's a place for us, a time and space for... Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was an interesting comparison. It almost feels melodically even that he wrote it opposite.
Yeah.
Where he kind of goes
he
down
inverted
and the,
it.
Yeah, the way the notes move. I have no idea if that's true or not, but I choose to believe it is.
That's
cool. What was the song that you're
Somewhere.
Well, Somewhere, and then what was the other one? The song that you were talking
Who Wants to Live Forever.
Who Wants to Live Forever.
Or is that the name of the song?
I'm pretty sure that's the name of the song.
Yeah. Anyway. And then one final fun fact for Samuel.
Ooh.
Heather, played by Betty Edney,
yeah,
is the judge in episode 6 of Andor.
Let's go.
Nice.
How about that?
So.
No. I
Coming soon to Banterbox.
Coming soon to Banterbox is the episode on Andor.
One way out. Oh, sorry.
So now we get to recast. Who are we?
Do we put Rick as Ramirez?
Yeah,
yes, 100% Rick is Ramirez.
Okay. I am one. I won't do it again.
Rick is Ramirez. Tyler as the main guy, Nash.
Awesome.
John as Angus.
Oh, yeah. Totally Angus.
Danielle as Heather.
Aw, that's so nice.
And
Samuel as the Marine.
Garfield.
Here's the thing, y'all. I actually would love and think Samuel would go insane with the Kurgan role
if he
was given. I think he would go absolutely, like, off the wall crazy with it.
of course I would, and
it would be so fun to watch.
Yes, I agree.
So I want to put him as a
Halloween
Kurgan
costume next year.
Oh my gosh, the Kurgan!
I'll shave my head for it.
Exactly.
No, you won't. Don't lie to this crowd.
Put safety pins on the neck.
Barely cut his hair. The Kurgan length.
What is the drinking game for this movie?
So you got to finish your drink every time they say there can only be one.
Ooh, yeah. That's a good one.
That's finish your drink.
They don't really say it all that
well, yeah,
much.
And that's why it's a good rule. Yeah.
Like three or four
yeah,
times.
So that's a good finish your drink.
Yeah, a good finish your drink.
Whenever two swords clash against each other.
No. No. Take a drink every time someone gets stabbed.
I was going to say every time they do a close-up on the eyes.
Oh, that could be good.
There you go.
That could be potentially good. There are a lot of eye close-ups.
Every hit on a back handspring.
Take a shot.
Well, you get them out of the way early.
Every time physics don't make sense, take a drink.
Every time you can see a production error.
Yeah, every time you see a safety cable.
Every production error,
every production error, take a shot.
So shot for safety cables. Take a drink every time physics doesn't make sense. And then finish your drink every time they say it can only be one.
Incredible.
That's a good game.
Incredible.
So favorite and least favorite moments of this movie, starting with whoever's ready. I have mine.
My least favorite was the casual racism throughout it.
That happened a good amount, as it does
and
in
homophobia
80s movies.
Too. There was
a good amount of homophobia. There was a good amount of racism.
But yeah.
It's like, why, when he's asking him if he's gay, he's like, you gay? And he's just like, why? Are you trying to ask me out? I don't remember the specific
part. And
it was much
worse.
Are
you cruising for a piece of ass?
That's what it was. Yeah, are you cruising for a piece
You're
of ass?
You're sick. but then I think my favorite was the joyride.
Oh my gosh.
It was so much fun.
The joyride was fun. My least favorite part were the flagrant and blatant sword misses. Where they're genuinely, where you can notice that they're missing their mark. That one hurt my heart a little bit. Because I was so amped up to watch a sword fight movie.
So, Highlander, Rise of Skywalker.
Okay.
Or was it the second one?
Last Jedi
was worse, yeah. Who had the worse execution of sword maneuvers?
You're going to hate this, but hear me out. I do think it's Highlander, and here's why. Highlander... They missed so Highlander's problem was that there were two swords. The focus was on two people. It's very easy to miss that. Whereas there's so much going on in The Last Jedi.
Yeah,
that a lot of it can be kind of like, if you're not really focusing on it, you will miss it. Whereas Highlander is like they're fighting. You missed your mark. But whereas with Rise of Skywalker. Jeez, Louise. When Last Jedi.
Rise of the Last Jedi.
Rise of the Last...
Rise of
Ray
Jedi
Charles. But like with that movie, unless you're watching like a video breakdown and you know exactly what you're looking for, it wasn't something that just jumped out at you. So I hate to say it, because I despise that movie, but that's what I would say.
I would tend to agree. There's a certain base level of fight choreo in most movies nowadays where there's a baseline that has pushed higher than it used to be.
Yeah.
If the Highlander came out today,
it would be way different
in terms of the
I'm sure that for the time it was pretty cool.
But maybe we did not mention this. They are working on a reboot of Highlander with Henry Cavill.
Really?
McLeod.
Okay.
Jesus himself? Are you serious? That's amazing.
That'd be cool.
Oh my god, that's gonna be so much fun.
For me, my least favorite, honestly, it's a little out there, but I was not a big fan of the stoning and bludgeoning sequence for Connor.
That was hard.
Because it was just so, like, cinematographer aspect, it hurt. Because it was just so jostling and all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm like, this could have been solved with just a wide shot. This did not have to be this intimate and up close. It hurt to watch. It was just too jarring for me, I guess. And I have to give my favorite scene to... Wait, stop. No, come back.
Police helicopter.
That scene was iconic for me.
That was fantastic.
Did you say your favorite, Tyler?
I did not.
Okay, sorry. Finish, John.
And then last but not least, I always have to do it. It's a John classic. Honorable mention goes to mid-fight with the Kurgan and what's the girl's name? I forget her name. She's
Brenda.
Brenda comes up, hits him in the head with a pipe, and then out of nowhere, Connor shows up. Took you long enough.
It was so random.
What was your favorite moment?
It's a pretty close toss up. I am gonna give it to Ramirez versus the Grogan.
Let's go Grogu.
Baby Yoda, I think, really carried his weight.
Cross of the stream.
For real. Oh, my God.
We've talked too much Star Wars.
So it's between that fight because, like, as campy and as insane as it was so fun and so good.
Oh, it was great.
And so it's between that and the specific shot where he finally, Nash wins at the end of the day and he's absorbing Badman's Grogu's soul. And he flies up, and it's just all the devils and the demons and everything going crazy. I was sitting there watching it. Now, we did see The Wire, which was really funny, but the animation was really cool. Like, what the hell? This is so cool.
There was a point where the director planned that when he cut Kurgan's head off, like an animated dragon came out of him, and McConner had to fight the dragon too.
Oh man.
But they said, we don't have the budget, obviously. to do that as well.
Well, what about you, Rick?
So I think my favorite was the whole bit with Lord Bassett.
That was just so much fun.
There's so many great lines in this when you watch it enough times, and you know, like, I apologize for calling your wife a bloated warthog, and I bid you good day. You know, it's just so great. And then it was hard for me to come up with a least favorite scene, but I think at this point my least favorite scene was the post knife to the heart sex. I mean, who among us doesn't get aroused when you stab somebody
and somehow
I'm not the only one, right?
Never really made the leap there.
That was a very interesting.
It was so odd. Yeah. Like, and it was one of those things where I was like, okay, this is exactly what I mean when I say, like, when people are like, oh, but like that sex scene had meaning, and I'm like, not really though. It was just gratuitous. It was just gratuitous. Here it is, because sex has to happen.
You had to have some boobs at some point.
You had to put boobs in the movie, or else it's not a movie. Yeah. But yeah, so my least favorite was any time that that, like, you know, it was that assault was referenced or was close to happening. I don't like that. I don't like watching it. I don't like hearing about it. It's not my thing. If I had to just go with, like, non content warning least favorite, it would be the scene in her apartment between the two of them because there was not chemistry. There was no chemistry.
Yes,
none at all. And she is, like, you know, trying to...
You can't have chemistry if you don't speak English, John? What are you trying to say?
That sounds a little xenophobic there.
Cancel John!
Take your spoons and quit stirring this pot, all right?
Chaos!
No, but they just didn't have any chemistry. He was acting really creepy, and she wasn't reading into it, and it made it seem very much to me like, okay... This I feel like portrays women as dumber than they are because of a guy's acting this creepy and weird.
She was pretty dumb. Kick
him out of your apartment. you run out of your apartment. And same with, like, she just was not smart. And so, like, even when she sees the Kurgan, she goes into her apartment where she's trapped.
Yeah.
I'm like, run back down the stairs and out the door where Connor is.
You get the,
like,
crap out of Dodge.
Why did you go in your apartment? You know this guy's a psycho.
So all of that stuff
where they just made her seem really dumb, I was like, this is not the vibe. And, like, especially because in the beginning she seemed so smart. She picks up the sword and has all this knowledge about it. And I'm like, she seems like she's going to be a really smart, badass character.
Intelligence versus wisdom.
That's very fair. She was intelligent. Oh, yeah. She had no wisdom score. Yeah. That is fair. I just didn't like that.
I got to just do two more real quick.
No, you're good.
The other line I love that was just so perfect for the Kurgan is when they're in the church. And after Connor leaves, and the priest comes up to him, and he says, you know, you're disturbing everybody. And, you know, the Kurgan says, he cares about these mortals. And the priest says something to the effect of course, he died for our sins. And the Kurgan says, that shall be his undoing. It's like,
Whoa. Oh, yeah, he also improvised the line right as he was leaving, that I have something to say, it's better to burn out than fade away. All of that was just improvised.
That was improv?
That was awesome.
How do you say something so unhinged? Like, that was so candid.
Well, apparently that line had not been exactly said that way, but had been sort of said in a couple of movies that had come out a few years before, so it was already in his head.
Wow. It was a Bob Dylan song, and then right before this, it was a Def Leppard song.
It was in a Def Leppard song.
The other favorite scene, just because I've seen this 1,000 times, is just the opening, where you hear Sean Connery doing the "From the Dawn of Time We Came Movings," and then he finishes blah, 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 "Until Now," and then you get Queen in a cappella, "Here We Are," and it's just. Oh, it's so awesome.
It was very good.
It sets the tone off the bat.
Yes, it does.
Even though you don't know what the tone is yet,
it does set the tone.
That's just awesome.
But my favorite moment, I knew it as soon as it happened, was every scene between Connor and Rachel. Every scene between Connor and Rachel, I loved.
Heather?
No, Rachel. His like adopted daughter. Every scene between them, like the scene obviously of him saving her from the Nazi guy, the scene of her like, you know, just kind of talking to him before he leaves, and then the scene of him saying goodbye. All three of those were like just my absolute favorite, because the actress who played Rachel did such a good job, and like there wasn't like romantic chemistry, but there was just such like chemistry of deep love for each other, and it was very gripping, and I just wanted so badly to see more of that, that those had to be my absolute favorites. So out of 10 katanas, what would you rate Highlander? Whoever wants to start.
I'll start. This movie was incomprehensible in the beginning. Strange, odd, and jarring at times, and sloppy in certain aspects as well. But I love this movie. I love this movie very, very much. I'm gonna give it a solid 8.5 out of 10.
Wow. Okay.
This movie, and with my rating system, like, man, this was a really good pick, and I was not expecting to like it as much as I did. I'm a huge fan.
Okay.
I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It was a good, you know, it's a great movie to sit down and watch with friends. Great rewatchability.
It gets better the more you rewatch it.
It gets better. They have a sequel.
I'm going to give it 7.5. It wasn't anything overly special to me, but it was something that I really enjoyed, and I'm sure I'll watch again at some point.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give, oddly enough, I'm giving it the same score. I'm 7.5 katanas. It's just, the acting from Lambert was
Which
rough.
Does make sense now.
It does make a lot of sense. And, you know, certain chemistry, but there were a lot of fantastic storylines and story beats. For instance, the relationship between Connor and Rachel, and then Connor and Heather, I thought were both fantastic and beautiful arcs. And the tutorship between Ramirez was lovely. But a lot of the cinematography, you know, it's 80s, but also, like, a little rough in certain points with the technical issues. But overall, for the rewatchability aspect, 7.5 katanas out of 10 from me.
Okay. Rick?
You go first. I want to go last.
Okay. I have to copy you guys. Yeah, definitely a 7.5 for me. I feel very comfortable right there. Because, again, like you said, you know, obviously there's a bunch that hasn't aged well, as is true of all 80s movies.
Except Lethal Weapon.
I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to it. But there's always stuff that hasn't aged well, just because, you know, things get dated. And obviously, like Tyler said, you know, there's stuff that kind of missed the mark, including several swords. But but for the most part, I had a really good time watching it. I will say this, I was never bored. Yep. I wasn't bored for a single second of watching that movie, cannot be said for, like, not most movies, but a lot of movies where there are definitely moments that drag. There was not a moment of this movie that dragged. So the pacing was breathless, but I actually appreciated that, because it kept me moving with the movie and didn't allow me any time to sit in, like, okay, this is taking a long time. Can we just, like, skip this?
Which is interesting because I think the runtime of this movie was right about 2 hours.
Yeah, it was. Just under.
It was.
For an 80s movie, that's pretty long. I mean, those were usually 90 to 110 minutes.
They're not very long.
And I noticed how long it was. Like, it was definitely noticeable, but I still wasn't bored. Like, everything was moving so quickly, I didn't have time to be bored. Which for me, with a movie like this, was like a very big selling point. Because if you don't give me time to like get bored, then good on you. But yeah, you know, there was great chemistry with a lot of the characters. You know, really good you know, performances in general. And yeah, I enjoyed
it. I wonder if they filmed the Scottish Highland stuff after most of the New York stuff, because he seemed much more comfortable acting with Heather and with Sean Connery than they he did have. With any of the characters in the modern day.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
I don't know either. Well, Rick?
Well, I just want to say, you know, I was lucky. I got to pick this, and I'm glad I found a movie that none of y'all had seen.
Oh, yeah.
That I've loved for a long time. Obviously, it's not a great work of art or whatever. But like you said, it's so much fun to watch with people.
Yes.
Right. And there are so many interesting beats in there. Like John said, the Heather, we love the whole Heather story.
Heather and Rachel's stories are both
lovely. It's so poignant because she says to him, "Why did you stay?" You know, it's because I love you. And it's like, you know, the guy's going to live forever and he's always going to have this. Right. So I'm just really, really glad that you guys liked it, and I hope that, you know, if it comes on TV, it doesn't really come on TV much, but if it shows up on HBO or something, you can sit and watch. I mean, for my rating, I would probably give it around an 8. I mean, it's good. You've got to love Sean Connery. You've got to love Clancy Brown.
Yeah.
Again, you just, if I see this is on, I'm watching it. Yeah. There's a certain set of movies. This is on that list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've got it memorized. So I'm just really glad that you guys liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome.
This was a solid pick.
There are, I mentioned at least once every other podcast, there are two types of movies that succeed in certain categories. There's ones that narratively succeed, like, you know, movies like Big Fish, where it's like this very great storytelling aspect that you bite into because the story's really delicious and it's really fun to kind of digest and enjoy. And then you got movies like Highlander that are just a spectacle, that are just fun, feel-good movies. The story isn't well thought out, but the concept you can latch onto and have fun.
And there are definitely pieces of the story that are really good.
Right,
the Heather line, the Rachel line, all of those, and like, you know, and all of his stuff with Sean Connery, those three specific storylines are very well done.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But unless anyone has any final thoughts, I think we're going to get out of here.
No, I thought this was an absolute romp.
Are we pulling from the box for next week?
Or
are we
going to
next week?
Oh, yeah.
Frosty,
we need to do that. John, quickly. Zoom.
No. John, it's behind, the thing.
I thought it was out there. Oh, okay.
Behind the coats.
Here, bring it over here.
I almost just bulldozed.
I don't think Samuel has pulled in a minute.
So are we doing, we're doing a banner box pick for next week and then and or the week after?
If we all finish it, because that's kind of the thing.
I'll get there. If everyone's in, I'll get there.
All right, Samuel. Yeah, take a pick from the box.
Let's see what's inside.
That sounds great.
Incredible.
Great. I mean, he gets to edit this, so he's doing it to himself. Yeah, I was about to say, don't go look in there, you cheater. Where's the pick? Did you pull yours?
No.
What did you pull?
I pulled Tyler's.
Oh, God. Which one?
Twisted Pear.
No!
Yes!
Oh,
yes!
This is a terrible movie. An actually genuine, terrible movie.
I've never.
Yeah, this is the best day ever.
And
the
everyone needs to be inebriated for this one.
Don't say that.
It won't be fun otherwise.
Don't say that.
It's a bad movie.
And I'm
going straight. Oh my goodness. Well, that's our pick for next time, guys. Is the classic Neil Breen absolute masterpiece, Twisted Pair.
Enjoy hell, everyone.
It's gonna be fabulous. Just a reminder, you can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment and on Twitter at @artists_mad. We are gonna be letting you guys know about our season for next year pretty soon. We just have to cross some T's and dot some I's before we can make it official. But we're gonna have a good lineup next year.
We can talk about next normal if you want.
Yeah, I already have, though. Just to remind you, we are starting rehearsals for Next to Normal in January, and we'll be performing that in March. So it's be on the lookout for information on that. Me and Tyler will both be in that production, so that's going to be a ton of fun. Please check us out on madartistco.com for all of our other things that we have going on. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests, like Rick did, to review in the future, you can email us at bannerbox.madartists@gmail.com or shoot us a message on our social media. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. It really helps us out. And we will see you guys next week.
Bye! Bye-bye.